This is Gordon Evans, and I am speaking with Kathy Albrow. She is the Democratic candidate for Congress in Michigan's 3rd Congressional District. We're speaking on the campus of Kellogg Community College. Thank you very much for making some time.
Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate being here.
Why don't you reintroduce yourself to the audience once again and tell us what you would like to do if you were to win a term in the U.S. House?
Well, my name is Kathy Albrow, and I live in Middleville, Michigan, and I'm the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 3rd District. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a big question. The list is long. Hopefully, we will have a majority in Congress, so I'm going to speak from that point of view that we are planning for that. I would start with healthcare reform. I believe that people, every day I hear people tell me stories of, even with Obamacare, there are huge issues of cost and ineffectiveness that we need to deal with right away. And that would really help a lot of people right away if we can make sure it's affordable and effective and then gradually move into a single-payer system.
And you do think a single-payer system is the way to go ultimately?
I do. I've done some study. I've talked to people in Canada that are involved in the medical profession. I feel very confident that we can save maybe 30% of what we're paying now. But I'm always open to learning new things, too. So if someone, other people that are smart, come up with another idea, I'd be very open to hearing about that, too.
How gradual do you think it needs to be to make that transition? Is it several years? Is it 10 years?
I don't want to guess on that. I really would like to have experts answer that question, but I really believe that it would probably take at least 3 to 4 years or more.
Do you think there has to be, are there certain steps along the way you're thinking of that have
yes,
to happen?
Yes, yes. Again, experts would answer this better than I can, but Canada implemented it gradually too, so we could learn a lot from them.
What do you think the minimum wage should be in the United States?
I believe the minimum wage should be a livable wage, and that might have to be determined regionally, because here in the 3rd District, about $15 to $16 an hour is a livable wage for a family of three, or a parent and a child at least, to have a two-bedroom minimal basic apartment. So again, I would say that that's a regional, but it should be a federal decision.
And should it be a federal decision to say that the minimum wage is $15, $16 an hour in Battle Creek, and maybe in Detroit and Ann Arbor, it's something different?
Right. Regionally. So I'm not sure how that would be determined by cost of living in some way. The experts can determine that.
What sort of broad policies would you want when it comes to taxation? Can you give me an idea of, do you think we need more tax brackets? Do you think we need to increase, the marginal rates at the top? What are the broad outlines?
Well, first of all, I am a fiscally responsible person. I do believe that we need to have a balanced budget and no deficit, if that's at all possible, because we are paying a lot in interest. But I do believe that we need to reprioritize our budget so that we look at return on investment. We are spending over half of our budget on defense, and is that a smart thing that we should be doing? That's a lot of money. And what is it going for? So we need to look at that more closely and maybe reallocate some of those funds as an investment in our infrastructure, as an investment in our children and their education, investment in our healthcare system, other things that will bring us capital and future investments in our country.
Do you favor a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution?
Not at this point, no. But I think that might be something in the future to think about. As far as taxation goes, you asked that question. I think that there are loopholes that we need to be closing. The last tax bill that was passed last fall does not really address those problems. We could be making more through taxes that way. I also believe that there are many tax fraud cases out there that have not been investigated. What I've heard is that for every dollar spent with the IRS, we reap $200 in return. So that seems like we should be doing more there. I also believe that the people and the companies who are making their wealth from taxpayer assistance, like public schools and roads and all of the infrastructure that taxpayers pay for, police and fire, and I mean, the list could go on, that those people should be paying their fair share, and I really don't think that that's happening right now.
You mentioned defense. Does that also mean that we need to take a look at where United States military personnel are around the world and have a rethink on that?
Yes, I do think. The world changes so quickly, and it's definitely changed from the Vietnam era and the Gulf War era and even just the recent wars that we've had. I really believe in diplomacy and working toward peace and for human rights and helping refugees and that type of thing rather than investing in more proliferation and war.
Under what circumstances, if you were a member of Congress, would you say that you think that the bar is met and that you would vote to authorize military force in another country?
Well, again, that is so subjective. I would say if there are human rights violations, that would be something that would help to determine that. I also would want to not be the only country doing that. I would want to work with our allies together on whatever the solution might be.
Education.
Mm-hmm.
Does the federal government spend enough on education right now?
No.
How much more would you want to spend?
I don't think the federal or the state government, if we're talking about Michigan, spends enough. I don't know enough about the budget right now. You know, in Congress, I would definitely know a lot more than I do right now about what's being spent and how, but I do know that there have been cuts that should not have been made because we actually do need more investment in early childhood all the way up through post-high school career development so that our students aren't going into huge debt in college. I believe that the Department of Education's responsibility is to hold every state accountable for equity, which means that every child gets what they need to succeed in life as far as their education goes. That's not happening in Michigan. There really are only four states in the country that have policies that relate to equity, and Michigan is not one of those states. So I believe that the federal government should hold states accountable, and then the states, it would be up to each state how they want to fulfill that, but we're not even close to funding school. The research that was done and came out, I think, last January in Michigan, said that we need to fund at least $2,000 per child more in this state to meet minimum standards, and children living in poverty should be an additional 35% beyond that, and special needs even more than that, and we're not doing that.
Your answer, though, does lead to maybe a broader philosophical question, because you will hear people who work in schools say, yeah, we don't get enough money. They'll also say sometimes they feel that they're kind of tied down by mandates.
Mm-hmm.
What's the right way from a policymaker standpoint to set standards and to try to ensure quality and at the same time not limit the freedom of people who are on the ground,
right,
to try and make the right decisions and you know, to not squash local control too much, I guess, is what you get.
Well, as a former teacher, I entered a profession and I got a lot of education on how to be an effective teacher. And I think we need to trust our teachers. If they've gone through and they've passed all their classes and they've proven, and I believe there should be a mentorship also for new teachers so that they're not just thrown into the field with no support, that they grow over their first 5 years maybe working with a master teacher. But those teachers should be trusted to know what's right. I mean, they do need direction as far as curriculum and standards go, but I believe in giving the teachers the freedom to work with the interests of their students. Every class is different. Every child is different. Their interests are different. What engages them is different. And teachers need to have that responsibility to be able to match that to their class, to their children. their curriculum.
Yeah, you also brought up student debt. You know, what would be the plans for addressing the students who right now are carrying it in college and maybe even are still carrying it as they've graduated, and then at the same time trying to address students coming in so that they don't accumulate
it? Right. So that's really two different things. It's helping the people who are already in debt. And I've read research that says that young people are putting off marriage, buying homes, starting families, all those things that are quality of life issues because they are in so much debt and they don't see a way out of it. So I would at least like to lower the interest rate, if not forgive the interest. And I've also heard of a plan that bases the debt and the payback on their income. So if they've gone to college and they've, you know, they're making $40,000 a year, then their payment plan or their what they owe should be adjusted to meet their what they're making. Now, as far as new loans go, I believe that we need, as a country, and other countries have done this, invest in our young people so that they are not in debt and that they can go to college either free from debt or very low debt and come out into a career and not have to worry about dragging themselves down with that.
Immigration.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the United States should do in terms of legal immigration? Should we be creating more ways for people to get here legally and to come into the country with documentation and have a pathway to citizenship?
Yes. I think that immigrants and, you know, we're all immigrants, really, unless you're a Native American, indigenous person. Immigrants are the backbone of the country. And we have to realize that it isn't going to be an all-white or majority-white country for much longer. And I think that's fine. That's great. Immigrants contribute so much to our society. And I also do not like to see families separated so that at least the nuclear family, whatever we can do to keep them together is important, I believe. We also know that we need immigrants to do our work here, too, because not enough Americans want to do the work. And again, if we can raise the pay, too, that will help the living standards, increase the living standards of immigrants. But I do believe that we should settle on our DACA policies and give those people a pathway to citizenship as soon as possible.
You're specifically there talking about the people who come here as children, very young children, and oftentimes they really don't know another country.
Exactly. And the ones that I know are very established. They are contributors either through school or in a career to our country, and they deserve to be citizens.
Do you support eliminating Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE?
I believe that we need to relook at that. We need a whole new immigration policy in this country, and I hope that we can begin working on that as soon as we're back in Congress in January. That has not been addressed. It should have gone to Congress in 2014, and it was withheld. The vote was withheld, so it didn't have a chance to pass. Since then, things have changed, so we would need to relook at that. But I think as soon as possible, we need to put laws in place so that everybody knows what our laws are, and we're not separating families for refugees or potential refugees coming to our country.
PFOSs have been found at a couple different spots in this congressional district, mm-hmm. Battle Creek, as well as part of Kent County. If you're in Congress, what sort of things would you want the House of Representatives and the Senate to take up to address this at the federal level?
Well, I think the PFAS is horrible, and I think it's a part of a larger problem that we have, and that is that the EPA is weakening rather than strengthening. The EPA should be the most basic of regulations or protections in this country. If states want to go above that, that's fine. But we need the federal government to set a high enough standard that we're not putting toxins in our water and our air. Because from state to state, we share water, we share air, we share the environment. So it cannot be a state by state type of law. It must come from the EPA. And we need to actually be testing more, because there are toxins that are being put in our water and our air. We have no idea what they're doing to us.
What about setting new thresholds and limits on what can be in the water, terms, you know, parts per billion,
right,
those sort of things? Is that a place where Congress should try to step in and say that there should be new standards set?
Yes, and I believe that that starts with science. We need to trust our scientists that know, they know, they're the ones that are doing the research, and we need to believe them and use that their research in order to guide us in our policymaking.
I want to go back to the economy for just a moment. You know, right now, the unemployment rate's down. The stock market is at record heights or close to it. You know, is there an argument there that people should really not want a big change in economic policy while things seem to be, by some indicators, going fairly well?
Well, some indicators, yes. I really believe we have two economies in this country. One is maybe for the top 15 to 10% who can afford to invest, who have employers, or they are employers themselves, who are doing very well right now. But then there are like 60% or 70% of the country that live paycheck to paycheck. And those are the people that I talk to every day. And they don't know how they can come up with $500 in case of an emergency. So there really is another economy that that headline overshadows. And so we need to bring into the forefront what regular working people are going through. We don't have much of a middle class anymore. We need to strengthen our middle class. And I've been endorsed by many unions, and I believe that unions helped strengthen the middle class many, many decades ago, and I think that they could help again.
And how should the federal government work with unions, or work to make the option available to more people to join a union?
Well, they're not making it very easy for unions to succeed at this point. Michigan is one of them, a right-to-work state. The prevailing wage was voted down. I would work to strengthen unions and make sure that members joined the union if it was a union shop. As a teacher, I belong to the MEA. My husband has a MEA pension, so we're enjoying the fruits of our union that we belong to. And unions maybe aren't the answer for every company, because there are very socially responsible companies that I would actually like to see those grow, the number of those grow. B Corps are an example where it's a triple bottom line. They care about their employees in the community, they care about the environment, and they care about a profit, because they need to be able to continue as a business. So I'd like to see more businesses like that, and maybe we could give some type of a perk to those businesses that care about their employees, maybe without union membership, but they do still pay a livable wage. They give them the benefits that they deserve.
Michigan has a couple of ballot issues which will be before voters. Of course, those don't affect federal law, but one of them would legalize marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a member of Congress, would you want to see some movement on changing the status of marijuana from a Schedule I drug?
Yes. Yeah. I believe that there's a huge problem with it being a criminal, that people can be thrown in jail for using marijuana. So I actually will be voting yes on Proposal 1. And it took me a while to come to that conclusion. I mean, I was part of the generation that used marijuana in college. I'm not saying I did, but I know all about it. And I was concerned, and I still am, you know, that young people would get involved with using it and smoking it. But what I found out was that there's a black market, and they have easy access, teens do and younger, to marijuana right now. And if it was legalized, we'd at least have some restrictions, and it would be more regulated. And so I think that that might be the best way to go, to decriminalize it. And the growers who are growing now and selling black market would go out of business.
criminal justice policy then from there, because that's part of where marijuana plays into. What would you want to work for as a member of Congress when it comes to criminal justice policy, fewer people in prison? What are the right things for the federal government to pursue there?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, education. You know, we have a prison or a school-to-prison pipeline with not funding adequately early childhood education, starting from infancy. I mean, we have parents going to work. We have parents going to school. They need early childhood. They need child care. And right now, they can't afford it. Many can't on the incomes that they have. High-quality child care, which is what we need. So I believe that the federal government should be responsible for helping to fund early childhood education. That would help. I was part of the High Scope Educational Research Foundation Perry Preschool Study, which found the return on investment of high-quality early childhood programs. For every dollar spent, there's about a $12 return on investment, and that part of that is much less incarceration and criminal activity for children who have attended a high-quality preschool. So that's just one way, but I think that there's a lot of racial bias in our punitive system. I believe in restorative justice, giving people opportunities to forgive and to speak with their victim and work with their victim. You know, that not for very serious crimes, but I believe for the lower level crimes, we could focus more on restorative justice rather than punitive justice. I also want to look at recidivism. We know what helps, you know, prisoners getting an education while in prison, making sure that they have adequate resources when they leave prison so that they're not back out on the streets committing more crimes. There's so much we could be doing that we're not doing.
As you well know, you are running in a district which is considered pretty safely Republican at the moment for Congress?
You might say that. I wouldn't necessarily.
Okay. Well, it has been in past elections.
Right.
So
right.
Make the case why it won't be in 2018.
Well, first of all, the Cook Report says that it's a Republican plus six district. And that was determined after the 2016 election. So a lot has happened in the last 2 years as far as demographics and people's thinking. So I believe that there is a very good chance that Democrats can win in the 3rd District, especially as a woman now. We're seeing more Democratic women winning higher margins. In fact, what I read was that Republican plus 11 is even doable. So I believe that I'm really working hard. I'm getting out and meeting people every day. This is a large district, and I believe that there's a good chance to win.
I talk to a fair number of Republicans every day who are not crazy about President Trump, and that is sort of what's overriding this entire election, of course, is how do you feel about President Trump, and does it motivate people? I guess my question to you is, you know, make the case to that Republican out there who says, yeah, I'm not crazy about President Trump, but you know what? I like the fact that Justin Amash once in a while does stand up to him, does vote in a different way, does actually speak out and say things which are critical of the president, and maybe that softens them up and gets them to stay home or stay with a Republican candidate in November.
Well, actually, I think that there are probably Trump supporters out there that are upset with Justin Amash because he's had a little bit of criticism. I don't think he's criticized him nearly enough in some cases.
Do you think those Trump supporters are going to vote for you if they're upset with Justin Amash?
I think I've already talked to many that will.
Really?
Yes, yes.
And still support President Trump. They still like President Trump, but they're going to vote Democrat in this race.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because for many reasons, you know.
So if you are then in Congress, what do you see as your role? I mean, do you see it as opposition to President Trump? Or if, you know, knowing that there are some voters, I guess, out there who have voted for President Trump but then have voted for Kathy Albrow, does that mean you got to you try to make the march down Pennsylvania Avenue and work with the president?
Yes, I do. I mean, I want to win so that I can help make government work. And I really believe that if we have a majority in Congress and maybe a majority in the Senate, that maybe President Trump will, you know, he won't have his Republican backers there to stand up for him. Maybe he will be more willing to work with Democrats. I mean, he flips a lot of different ways anyway, but I am a person who wants to solve problems. And if President Trump can work with us to solve problems, then I would be happy to do that.
Kathy Albrow, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Kathy Albrow is the Democratic candidate in the 3rd Congressional District, which includes Calhoun, Barry, Ionia, most of Kent, and part of Montcalm County. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.